this reflected an extremely well-organized campaign, basically in which the control of the constituencies was in the hands of the police and the army and the Central Intelligence Organization. The interferences were being done by party functionaries, youth militias, ZANU-PF supporters. They were controlling movement into the constituency and out of the constituency. They were allowing certain things to happen, ZANU-PF youth to intimidate people, to threaten people. They were allowing politically motivated food distribution and not interfering with any of that process. But they were, in fact, stopping the MDC from holding meetings, arresting people for putting up posters and various kinds of things.
Why is it that the elections, apparently in the international press, seem to have gotten passing grades, passing marks in terms of violence, that there is a perception that there was no violence or so little violence that it did not get very much publicity?
Well, I think that was, you know, if you will recall, these elections were supposed to be held under a new rubric, the SADC protocol. And if you look at that protocol, it doesn't merely talk about physical violence. It talks about the ability to exercise all your basic freedoms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But everybody bought into the idea that the measure for an election in Zimbabwe is whether it is physically violent or not, whether people have been beaten up, tortured, murdered, et cetera. So when that process happens, people say, see, it's a peaceful election. But our view is, on the basis of this, that there was subliminal violence going on, if you want, and our analysis of that is that in a country that has been experiencing sustained violence over 5 years, intimidation, i.e. the threat to commit violence or to be violent to people, has a very powerful effect on the electorate.
And what was the effect on the electorate? Did they either vote for the ruling party or just stay away?
It's very difficult to say because, you know, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has yet to release a comprehensive report with all the results to the public. You know, it's what, several months past the election here, we still do not have a report from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of saying, you know, how many voters should there have been, how many people actually voted, you know, how many people were turned away, how many spoil papers. All of that data can only be compiled from secondary sources. So it's very difficult to say what exactly happened. Our view is that actually the sustained political pressure and intimidation on people both had two effects. One, it caused people to stay away, and the second one is it caused people to vote for ZANU-PF.
You said that the evidence suggests that constituencies were controlled by state agencies. Is that illegal under SADC election guidelines?
When the NCA was putting out its reports, that was the point they were making all the time in the pre-election period during their reports, was that there was significant degrees of electoral irregularities taking place. And they also pointed out that most of those irregularities seemed to be focused on the urban areas rather than the rural areas. But to go to the heart of your question is what you expect from the security forces and the constituencies is a nonpartisan position, i.e., you know, that political parties who misbehave are brought to book by the police, irrespective of which party. That would be the basis of the SADC protocol. What we see is that, in fact, did not happen.
You've been quoted as saying that the ruling party's win of a large majority is unusual in the world of politics, especially a ruling party that's been in power for so long and had very poor governing results over the past several years. On the other hand, could one assume, or did you find any data to show that perhaps voters were just dissatisfied with the opposition party for not being able to achieve tangible results itself over the past few years, and that opposition party people perhaps stayed home or switched their votes back to Mugabe?
In the absence of seeing a pattern of gross irregularities, one would easily hold that hypothesis. I mean, firstly, it is unusual that governments that watch the economy literally disappear down the toilet get reelected anywhere. That they come back with sweeping majorities is very unusual. But there is evidence. The Afrobarometer report last year that IDASA and other people put together on Zimbabwe showed a very large, uncommitted section of the the electorate, people who are unwilling to say whether they supported ZANU-PF or MDC. And I think there is undoubtedly has been a trend to people losing faith in the MDC. But that's a very difficult thing to interpret. Are they losing faith in the MDC, or are they buckling under the relentless pressure of a political party that refuses to give up power and will maintain any kind of pressure to maintain that power? And certainly that was one of the findings of the Afrobarometer report, was that Zimbabweans were giving up on the notion of democracy and becoming more acceptable in the sense that they would just have to accept a one-party state.
Do you hold, or can the pro-democracy movement hold the opposition responsible for playing within the system and challenging irregularities within the system which was set up by the government?
Once you say you're going to challenge them in the courts, you know, you are accepting the electoral process. You are accepting the election, and then you're going to accept the mechanisms for dealing with irregularities, i.e. you do accept the election in a tentative way. And we think that that was the intent.
You had found, I think, in the report that surrounding governments as well validated the results of the elections based on, is that correct, the willingness of the MDC to go through the government setup, the government-appointed system. I mean, is that accurate as well?
I think that's accurate. I think the dilemma for the major observing groups, the South Africans, SADC, and the AU, none of whom were in the country very, very long, so we were not able to observe this election climate, when the MDC said, we're going to challenge this in the court, it gave them the let-out, because they could say, well, that's fine. It's the usual election. There are some irregularities. You're going to go to the courts. The courts will decide whether the results were valid or not. So it's not for us to say that when you're going to go to your own courts. So we can now quite happily pontificate upon these elections and say, you know, the legitimate expression of the people's will kind of thing, and leave you with it.
But did the three monitoring groups that you've just mentioned, did they also pressure the MDC to seek a so-called peaceful solution and work through the system? Did they play a role in this and perhaps are culpable to some degree in encouraging the MDC rather than boycotting or having any kind of protest, but to cooperate with the system?
I think in the pre-election period, I think what all the available evidence suggests is that there was significant pressure placed upon the MDC by all groups to participate in this election, that nobody was in favor of them boycotting the election.
Or boycotting the results.
Yeah, but boycotting the results was a different issue. Now, you know, I think what was critical was if they boycotted the results and therefore concluded that the election as a whole under the SADC protocol had not met those standards, they probably would have created a political crisis that would have made it much more difficult for those observer groups to say, well, we think it's free and fair. But the moment they said, well, we'll give partial acceptance of it and we will challenge the results in the court and, you know, we go to parliament, that's validation of an election.
Did you find that the Zimbabwe system that was set up to investigate complaints, did you find that it was honest, or did have you found since the investigations concluded that it was corrupt? I mean, any of these seats that were challenged, any of these constituencies that were challenged by the MDC, were they honestly investigated?
The problem about our electoral law is that there isn't an investigating agency. There's a court. And what you have is a civil suit, essentially, you know, like suing somebody for damages. The MDC puts its arguments about why this result should not stand to the court. ZANU-PF make their arguments as to why it is a valid result, and then the court judges it. Now, there has been no result yet from a single court case. They've withdrawn a fair number of these petitions. But you will remember that Zimbabweans as a whole have not much faith in that process, because in 2000, there were 31 challenges, or no, 38 challenges, okay? And the MPs, you know, and a number of those were overturned by the courts and then appealed to the Supreme Court. And virtually none of them, resulted in a clear decision being made, that all those MPs who were subject to petitions saw out the lifetime of the 2000 Parliament. And one of the arguments in the pre-election period was that, of course, there must be timeous and rapid hearing of these petitions. And what the law says is basically, you know, you have to object within 31 days. You must respond. The plaintiff makes a complaint within 31 days. The respondent then has 31 days to respond, and then it goes to court. Now, that didn't happen in 2000. It looks like it's happening quicker at this time, but there is a huge amount of confusion because the MDC is withdrawing its petitions all over the place. And so none of these court cases has yet produced a result.
Are there any, why is it withdrawing its petitions? Just because it doesn't trust the process or the length of time, et cetera?
It's difficult to say. I don't have a clear perspective as to why they're withdrawing them. Some of their candidates are saying they're insisting that they go through with it. They said they were only going to take a small number of petitions to make the point that there were irregularities. But I think that, you know, the question is, do they have the data? And in the absence of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission making available to everybody all the results, MDC's got to rely on, excuse me, on its polling agents and the data that they collected from the polling stations. Now, that's a complex process, as you'll know. It means that you have to have accurate returns from your polling agents from every polling station in a constituency. And there were a very, very large number of constituencies, and I think the available evidence suggests that the MDC did not have total cover within constituencies.
Based on your report and the analysis of data, is there anything that we can learn from this?
Oh, I think we've learned a huge amount. You know, first of all, you have a set of principles and guidelines for what an election should look like, and these need now to be operationalized in a very clear way. So in other words, if you say there shall be free access to the media, that needs to be, you know, clearly specified what that means, you know, how much time, equal sharing of time on television, for example, you know, and that can be monitored. So you must operationalize the principles and guidelines in clear behavioral ways. That's number one. Number two is it's absolutely critical that observer groups of the widest possible constituency, not hand-picked as they were for the Zimbabwean election, come in a long way ahead of time and are able to travel around and observe very clearly what's going on for a very extended period of time. You know, the AU was in, I think, something like 4 or 5 days before the election. What you conclude from such observation is really what happened on the day. And they legitimately said that. At the point of poll, everything looked fine. But they were unable to comment on anything that might have happened 2 months before or 4 months before. So observation must be an extensive process. Thirdly, I think that you have to ensure quite clearly, as South Africa has, that the body that runs the election is genuinely independent, right? It must be absolutely independent, and it must have all power over the elections. It means that, you know, the police and all those sorts of people must take their guideline from the Independent Electoral Commission. And then finally, it must be the case that on polling day that you can easily do parallel counts, parallel observations, and those kinds of things. And one final step is absolutely for sure, total information about what's happened in that election must be made available immediately afterwards by the Electoral Commission. Now, you know, the moment you change some of those things, you cannot say that the integrity of the poll is guaranteed. Now, IDASA made a statement immediately after the election where we said very clearly the integrity of the poll is not guaranteed. And what that means is that from the printing of ballot papers through all the way through to the counting and the announcing of results must be scrutinized and be open to scrutiny. That wasn't the case in the Zimbabwe election. There are black holes all over the place where nobody knows anything. We don't know how many ballot papers were printed. We don't know how they were allocated to the polling stations. We don't know what happened with the postal votes. We don't know what happened in the period between the count finishing at the polling station and the announcement of the votes at the command post. We don't know what happened between the command post and the overall electoral office. There are places all over this election where you cannot scrutiny. So the key to guaranteeing election is absolute transparent scrutiny. It's the only way.